Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I am joined by The Athletic's Harmon Dial. Thanks so much for coming on the show. I feel like every year you come on around after the Canucks season, and I say, how crazy was it covering this team this year? So I guess that's the perfect way to start. What was it like just covering this very eventful and obviously up and down season in Canucks land?
Yeah, it was chaotic. I mean, after the team success last year, making round two, game seven, you thought, okay, the Canucks have finally stabilized. They found the right head coach in Rick Tocchet. Their star players are really hitting their potential. The expectation this year, frankly, was for them to be a fringe Stanley Cup contender. It wasn't just make the playoffs and be a decent team. It was, okay, this is a team that could do some serious damage in the Pacific Division, in the Western Conference. And this wasn't just a market sentiment thing. Even if you look at, let's say, Dom Lucician's model over at The Athletic before the season started, I believe he had the Canucks rated somewhere around the fifth best team in the NHL. So expectations were genuinely high and for good reason, but everything hit the fan. Everything that could have seemingly gone wrong went wrong. I mean, who could have predicted that Elias Pettersson would have continued his struggles from last year's playoffs and his poor play down the stretch and into this season and not even cracking the 50-point mark this year? Who could have thought that he and Pettersson would be feuding again and that it would get so bad that JT Miller would need to be traded? Who could have imagined that Thatcher Demko would have missed most of this year with injury? That basically every core player missed significant time with injury, whether it was Hughes, Pettersson, Besser, Hronek, Demko, obviously, Dakota Joshua, testicular cancer in the offseason. And when he returned, he was very understandably a shadow of the player that he was last year. On the back end, the bottom four turned out to be a disaster. We knew heading into the season that, okay, there isn't enough puck moving here. This could be a potential weakness, but nobody could have expected Carson Soucy, for example, who had been a really sturdy, reliable second pair defenseman, to regress to the point where he was barely playable at times, until he was shipped out to New York, closer to the trade deadline. So the story of the Canucks this season was really that pretty much everybody outside of Quinn Hughes, Kevin Lankinen, and a couple of the call-ups from Abbotsford later toward the year, pretty much everybody underperformed expectations. And you're now in a situation where the Canucks are facing a rocky, murky future again.
I guess, we'll get into to Rick talking shortly, but what do you see the pathway forward as for this Canucks teams with so much, seemingly unresolved heading into the offseason?
Yeah, first of all, before you even move on, it says a lot about how many crazy storylines there have been that in answering your first question, I didn't even get to the fact that they didn't sell Brock Besser at the trade deadline, despite clearly knowing that they weren't planning to re-sign him, or Pia Suter. Like, not selling at the deadline is a team that you understood you could miss the playoffs and that this definitely wasn't your year to contend for the Stanley Cup. To walk away and lose those guys for nothing is criminal. And so the fact that that didn't even come up, or I mean, the Tocchet news that he's walking, that didn't even come up in the first part of my answer, just speaks to how many negative storylines have surrounded this franchise lately. There have just been dark clouds everywhere. And in terms of the path moving forward, it all surrounds Quinn Hughes, right? He's the main topic of discussion. Rutherford has really, like, I know people outside of Vancouver have been reacting to, whoa, Rutherford's talking about Quinn's future. But for us in Vancouver, he's really just said the quiet part out loud. Everybody knew that Quinn Hughes is going to be extension eligible at the end of next season. The allure of playing with his brothers closer to his home, in the eastern part of the United States, is going to loom large on a Devils team that, yeah, disappointed this year, but largely has a bright future. You know that the pressure is on next season. The big goal right now is making the team as good as possible for next year to entice Quinn Hughes to sign an extension in the summer of 2026. And that means this is going to be an offseason where the club is going to have to go all in to improve the roster as drastically and as dramatically as possible.
I guess like I feel like there's like five different ways I can go in this, but like Besser seems to be leaving. You mentioned Suter as well, who's a really good player, scored 20 goals this year. Like they have a bit more cap space, but not a ton to make, go crazy shopping in the off season. Like what are the players who do you think what do you think they'll do this off season? Is it via trade? Is it adding, a couple forwards? Is it adding to the defense? Like, what avenues do you think this, Rutherford and Alvin will take this offseason?
It's definitely the forward position. The blue line is well stocked right now with Hughes, Hronek, Marcus Pedersen, Tyler Myers. Surprisingly, he has aged well through his mid-30s and is still a reliable second pair defenseman at this stage in his career. Plus, you've got some young D prospects on the way. Elias Pedersen, not to be confused, obviously, with Elias Pedersen, the forward, was a huge bright spot and looks to be a building block type of defenseman. Tom Willander, there have been a lot of shenanigans around. It's again, speaking of another negative
I was
storyline,
gonna, yeah.
he mysteriously hasn't signed an entry-level contract yet, but there's still time before next season, and they're sort of feuding over Schedule A bonuses right now, but that could get resolved, and if that happens, then he'd be part of your blue line plans as well. Victor Mancini came over in the JT Miller trade, and he has looked terrific in the AHL lately. He's another right shot defenseman to keep an eye on. So on the blue line, both in terms of current talent and future prospects, they're well stocked, which means really the needs are up front. And it makes sense, right? This is already a team that struggled to score this past season, and you're potentially losing Brock Besser, you're potentially losing Suter, who scored 25 goals for you this past year. They need a lot more scoring, and they need it at the top of their lineup. We're not just talking about top six guys. We're talking about ideally players that can play on your first line and actually drive the bus, give you 70, 80 plus points in a season, which is really hard to do. That business is likely to get done via the trade market. Rutherford was pretty clear about that during end of season availabilities. And that means that this organization is going to face tough decisions around what assets are you going to part ways with. This year's first round pick, I would expect to be dangled on the trade market. We spoke about the surplus of defense pieces they have, especially young blue chip guys. Does that mean a Tom Willander, for example, could be potential trade bait to go out and specifically get a top six centerman to pair with Elias Pettersson, because they have a JT Miller sized hole down the middle right now, and Suter was also playing regularly, second line minutes or third line center minutes. So if he leaves as well, that's only going to add to sort of the uncertainty, since Philip Hedl has potential, but with his injury risks, you just can't rely on him as a 2C next year. So have to add at the center ice position in your top six. Probably have to add another first line caliber winger. That's probably going to have to get done on the trade market, and that means the Canucks are going to have to give up a lot to get what they want.
There was some rumblings or people thinking about Elias Pettersson or Elias Pettersson's future in Vancouver. Obviously he signed the big extension. He doesn't have a no, his no move clause kicks in, I think July 1st or, from the sounds of it that you're describing, it sounds like he's going to be part of the future and part of this team moving forward. Is that your expectation? And maybe how do you explain his, drop in play the last, year of from basically the second half of two seasons ago to all of last year?
Yeah, it's really mysterious. I haven't seen anything like this. It's been 14 months now, right? It's not just this season. It goes back to February of 2024, where his production just kind of cratered. And when it originally happened, you thought that okay, it might be mostly injury related because Pettersson revealed at the end of last season's playoff run that he'd been playing through knee tendonitis that had affected him around January, which coincides with when his production fell off a cliff. So you're like, okay, great, he's going to heal up in the offseason. He's going to bounce back to being a 90 to 100 point guy this season, and it just never happened. And the baffling part about Pettersson's drop off is how significantly the physical tools in his game have fallen off. His skating speed, both by the eye test and by NHL Edge data, has declined precipitously. He doesn't have that same burst when he's transporting the puck up the ice, which has hindered his ability to manufacture rush offense. The velocity of his shot isn't what it used to be. This is a guy that a couple of years ago won the hardest shot competition at the All-Star game. Had a wicked one-timer that you could build a power play around. It was a pinpoint accurate finisher with his wrist shot as well. He was an assassin with his shot. It was one of his best weapons, and it was so strange this past season seeing him not have the same level of oomph with that shot, but also be so reluctant to use it. He lost a lot of his confidence where numerous times this season he would get the puck in a prime shooting location and double clutch, look for the extra pass, bobble or mishandle the puck. His shot rate cratered by 30 to 40% compared to where it was 2 years ago. So this isn't just a case of, oh, he's been generating chances and he's been looking dangerous, but you know what, the results just aren't there and he's just been unlucky. No. Something is really off and wrong with the process. And the number one thing that stands out is the lack of controlled entries, the lack of rush offense, which stems from, okay, the acceleration of his skating looks flat right now. He was never a burner. He wasn't a Jack Hughes, a Nate MacKinnon, or a Connor McDavid, obviously, but in his peak, he could dynamically lead entries and rushes. And this year, there was just none of that. And the hard part is, I don't know how confident I feel that that part of his game is going to return next season. You hope that with a full off season of training properly, he can get back on track. The organization seems to think that he just didn't prepare himself properly. And has spoken a lot about practice habits and fitness. And so, you know, maybe that's one theory, but I asked Pettersson point blank at end of season availability is about the fall off related to his skating speed and his shot. Asked him if he had any theories, and he was stumped himself. He didn't have one to share. So it's a little bit concerning, but at the same time, before these past 14 months, this is a player that has routinely, for several seasons, been a legit number one centerman in the NHL. So it gives you hope that the talent should sort itself out. I mean, it's rare for a player in his mid-20s to just forget how to skate, forget how to shoot. You'd expect, even though we don't have a theory, you'd expect at least some level of improvement in those physical categories next season, which should help. And ultimately, the reason I expect Pettersson to stay more than I expect him to be traded before his July 1st NMC kicks in is simply because this team has such a shortage of elite forward talent that as much as I have question marks about Pettersson and whether you can win a Stanley Cup with him as your best forward, as much as I know the organization has question marks about his work ethic, his commitment, his ability to truly elevate and do the Quinn Hughes thing where continually he improves his craft every single year. If you trade him, this team would literally be left with zero forwards under contract for next season who have had 60-point seasons in the NHL before.
Oh my
So,
God.
like, you just have such a deficit of forwards with the potential to be 70, 80, 90 point guys that you almost have to roll the dice on Pettersson, especially with the pressure of you have to contend next season. You have to be good enough so that at the end of next season, Quinn Hughes can see the vision and can perhaps feel confident enough to at least explore the idea of an extension.
I guess, and I'm sure you've thought about this a lot, and were asked this a lot, maybe a couple months ago before the JT Miller was shipped off to New York. But like, why do you think at the end of the day the Canucks picked, in a sense, Pettersson over Miller when clearly the two had a spat? And I don't know as much as you do, but like, why do you think, you just laid out, Pettersson's future and all the questions. Like, it doesn't seem like a guy that you want to you bet on compared to Miller, who's, obviously a problematic, player sometimes, but also, was performing and performed and continued to perform in New York.
Well, Miller's had his issues as well, not just off the ice, but even in Vancouver. I know the point totals will say 35 points in 40 games, but his drop off was a huge story as well, where defensively just the bottom completely fell out. Last year, he was this team's best forward, 100 plus points, but more than that, it was okay, all around matchup center. He's competing, he's playing the right way. He is driving play, whereas this year he was very quiet in terms of the play driving aspects. His defensive play was horrific. And this is the difference, right? Where Patterson, the points weren't there, and that's very, very alarming, but he never cost the team games defensively. There was always a really high floor for his performance in his own end of the rink, whereas JT would get his points, but he had some brutal defensive lapses, and the way that he was, like, even just being around him on a day-to-day basis, you could tell, okay, this is a player that could really use a fresh start. I'm not convinced that he really wanted to be there anymore. I also think that a big reason the organization sort of leaned towards Patterson rather than Miller is Pettersson's 26, whereas JT is 32, and you're trying to build a contender that can, or a team that can contend for many years, rather than with Miller. There's a fear that okay, he's in his 30s now. You don't have a long runway left with him as a number one center. So I think those are some of the reasons, and ultimately even just. When the Miller Pettersson feud happened, and Patrick Alvin has a number of times discussed trade, he sort of multiple times referenced the that how both sides felt. There was a need for a fresh start, and I think it's not just pure hockey reasons why they chose to deal him instead of Pettersson. I'm sure there's a lot behind the scenes that we may never get details on, but quite clearly this was a complicated, sort of fractured relationship between Miller and the Canucks by the end of his tenure.
At the same time, I'm curious, you mentioned how much this team is bereft of scoring talent, especially with the forwards. Why was Brock Besser not a priority for them? I know he's a flawed player. He could definitely be better defensively, but it seems like they could have traded him at the deadline. They didn't, but it doesn't sound like they're signing him. Why isn't he going to be likely a Canuck, next season, and why did they go down that route?
I've just never gotten the sense that they fully believe in Brock as a top flight goal scorer. I don't think they believe in him as a consistent 40 goal guy. Really, the message for him at the end of last year, where he had the career breakout 40 goal campaign, was essentially do it again. The organization didn't seem too eager on discussing a contract extension, and I think they, like, reading between the lines, have some question marks around his foot speed. Maybe how well he's going to age, but above all, it really comes down to a disagreement fundamentally on what the two sides believe the player is worth. Besser, because of his resume, because of how thin the free agent market is, the spike in the cap, how many teams are going to have cap flexibility, is going to be able to demand a lot of money. He could very reasonably be an $8 million guy on his next contract on a long-term deal, and I think that just exceeds the risk tolerance that the Canucks were willing to take on in terms of the offers that they made to Brock closer to the trade deadline. And ultimately, as far as why he wasn't dealt, I really think it's as simple as they felt that they really needed to make the playoffs. And I think at the time they knew they were unlikely to re-sign Besser. But it was, in my mind, primarily motivated by the organization's desire to want to squeak out a wild card spot, which they, of course, couldn't do anyway.
I guess, like, it seems like they're caught between a rock and a hard place in terms of wanting to become that ultra competitive, or like a one of the better teams in the league for Quinn Hughes next season. I guess, like, what was your sense of how Quinn Hughes digested this season and everything that happened?
It was a lot. He sounded like an exhausted player at the end of the season, and not just because of the team dynamics around him, but he had to play through multiple injuries towards the end of the season. I mean, you could tell. He was an exhausted player with the minutes that he was logging regularly, playing 30 minutes. And not again, not just one injury, but multiple injuries. You could tell he was far from 100% physically, coming out of the other side of the Four Nations break. It weighed on him. He took on a huge workload every night. He was expected to put the team on his back, single-handedly drive the offense. He had a phenomenal season. Definitely deserved the Norris Trophy finalist nomination. But there's only so much one player can do, and I think when you look at everything that happened around him, I think that just added to the burden. Right, the Pettersson Miller disagreement. I'm sure that that weighed really heavily on him as the captain, sort of having to resolve that and do everything in his power to smooth the waters on that. Just this season had so much drama and uncertainty, and as a captain of the season, he feels the burden and the responsibility of that. He understands that okay, one player alone can't right the ship, but when things go sideways, he takes that really personally and takes that upon himself. He's a highly accountable individual, and so I'm sure not making the playoffs tore him up inside. I'm sure the lack of sustainability after last year and being unable to sustain that momentum forward, given how many times he's missed the playoffs in his career, absolutely ate away at him. So at the end of the season, you could tell he's exhausted, guy needs a vacation, and I trust that individually, he's going to do everything in his power. Every summer, he comes back in better shape, having worked on one specific part of his game that, maybe it was a weakness or maybe it wasn't even a weakness, but he turns from something that's good to great. And you just know that he's consistently going to put the work in and be an even better version of himself next season. It's just whether management can do enough to surround him with the sufficient help.
I mean, maybe this is a loaded question, but you led me directly into it. What do you think the chances are that in a year from now he's, signing on the dotted line to become a Vancouver Canuck for, maybe the next half decade or longer?
Tough question to project now. I think so much of it depends on next season. If I had to say right now, like put it this way, if Hughes was extension eligible this summer, with all the drama surrounding the team, Rick Tocchet leaving, the disappointment of this past season, I don't think Quinn would be eager a full year ahead of his contract coming up to sign on the dotted line. But a lot can change in a year. The Canucks have seen that twice. Not just this season where things went sideways, but the season before where it looked like the organization was in a tough spot and everything went right. At one point, I think heading into the All-Star break, they were tied for first place in the entire league standing. So a lot can change in a year, and so much of it, I think, will hinge on next season.
You mentioned Tocchet, and that was another roller coaster. Will he, stay or will he go? And eventually he left. What happened there? And maybe, you wrote a story with Drancer just about like potential candidates, but maybe walk us through where you think the Canucks are, where they're looking for the next head coach.
Yeah, with Rick Tocchet, management really wanted him to stay. Quinn Hughes is a huge fan of Tocchet and wanted him to stay. But Tocchet, I think with his contract being up, he's at an age where he probably wants to have a legit chance to contend consistently. And he's earned that shot with how highly regarded he is around the league. I know overall, You look at his HockeyDB page and say, oh, points percentage isn't that great. I think it's misleading. I think he's a better coach than that. You look at the Arizona Coyote teams that he had to coach in years past. It's a nightmare. No coach could have had success with those teams. And so Tocchet's kind of earned the opportunity to pick a spot, go to an environment where a first-class organization where he has a chance to win. And I think he looked at the situation and went, there's just a lot of uncertainty with the Canucks right now. This season was super draining on him. He was really honest about that during his end of season availabilities before we, of course, knew whether he was going to stay or go. He probably is unsure about Quinn's future, right? Because if you're committing to the Canucks long term, Canucks' ability to contend hinges on Quinn staying long term. And if you don't have certainty around that, if you don't know definitively, yes, Quinn Hughes is going to be a Vancouver Canuck for a really long time, I can understand why Tocchet would have his reservations and want to take a step back and reassess what his options are. And as far as the path forward for the Canucks, there are a number of directions they could go. I lean towards believing the market as far as recycled head coaches, guys who have been head coaches at the NHL level previously, is weaker. It's not very inspiring. Sullivan's obviously off the board. John Cooper's back in Tampa. We'll see what happens with Jared Bednar in Colorado. Obviously, if he becomes available, he's someone you would have to really seriously consider. But I don't think this organization should go in the Peter Laviolette direction or Derek Lalonde or, I mean, maybe you look at Jay Woodcroft, but the more I'm looking at this head coaching search, the more I lean toward giving somebody an opportunity who has an elite AHL track record and has some level of NHL experience as an assistant, but being willing to bet on that type of a coach with that profile, even if they don't have previous head coaching experience at the NHL level, and that could be Manny Malhotra, who has 7 years of experience as an assistant at the NHL level, did an absolutely wonderful job as the head coach of Abbotsford in the AHL this year. Todd Nelson. I would look at Mitch Love. In Washington, he's an assistant with the Capitals right now, but before that, he was part of the Flames organization, was really close to winning that head coaching job. He did terrific work with the Wranglers. I'd be trying to find a fit like that because we've seen around the NHL that whether it's Spencer Carberry or when John Cooper was originally hired or Jared Bednar or Rod Brind'Amour, you can find like some of the most successful head coaches lately, Marty St. Louis, have been guys who weren't previous NHL head coaches.
Do you have a favorite in the race right now, or someone that you think like kind of sticks out more than the rest?
I lean towards Malhotra right now. It'd be a risk. Although the more that I've been thinking about it, Mitch Love is somebody that I'd be seriously considering as well. He's a really sharp mind. I think he has a bright future in this league. Obviously, the Canucks can't talk to him yet because Capitals are still in the playoffs, but he's absolutely somebody that I would be considering. I think those two are the most appealing guys that jump off the page to me, just because I've also had the opportunity to, I've had one or two conversations with both guys in the past. And just their knowledge of the game, how prepared they are, detail oriented, just very, very sharp coaches that have shown they are elite at the AHL level. And again, coaches with that profile can have a lot of success when they're finally given that shot with a head coaching gig in the NHL too.
Maybe to keep on trying to have some positivity, like what do you see as like the possible, in a sense, positive avenues for this team to regroup and become, maybe not a cup contender, but like establish themselves back as a playoff team next season?
Yeah, we'll see what they do on the trade market, but there is reason to believe there should be positive regression for a number of guys internally. Elias Pettersson, I don't know if he's necessarily going to be an 80, 90 point guy next year, but I would definitely take the over on 46 points or whatever he had this season. He has the potential to be a lot better. Thatcher Demko was hampered by injuries, but we also saw the year prior, he was the Vezina Trophy runner-up. He's got a really, really high ceiling if he can stay healthy. And we know in this league, if you can get elite goaltending, it can paper over a lot of cracks. So he's somebody that has star-level upside that you already have in your organization. Somebody like Dakota Joshua, who this year was a write-off because of the cancer that he went through. But if he can bounce back, a year ago, he was a player that scored 18 goals, was part of one of the best third lines in the NHL with Connor Garland, obviously. If he can bounce back, that gives you a little bit more of a punch offensively in your forward group. They've got intriguing young prospects that, okay, they may not take over in huge roles out of the gate, but Jonathan Lekkomäki was really productive in the AHL this season. He's a highly touted prospect, and let's see what type of jump he can make in the summer. And he could possibly be a top line option for next season. DPD, Elias Pettersson, the defenseman, he should be part of the NHL group next year. Tom Welander, if he signs, like they've got young guys that could take a step, which in conjunction with the bounce back potential of Pettersson, of Demko, of some other guys on the roster, of Nils Höglander, and the forwards they're going to add this offseason, you can see the path for them being a playoff team. The bigger concern is really, do they have the ceiling to actually do damage in the playoffs if they get there? And that's where the path is a lot trickier.
How would you assess the first like 3 or so years of Albin and Rutherford so far?
Mixed bag. I think they. It's important to remember that they inherited a tough situation, very tough situation. This was a team that was rudderless. Yeah, you had your core, you had guys to build around in terms of Hughes, Miller, Pettersson, but nothing really else. The cap situation was a complete mess. There were bad contracts littered everywhere. They had a deficit of quality prospects. The pipeline was pretty bare. And you look at the top prospects this organization has, they're all drafted by this regime. And of course, you would expect that now that they've been at the helm for some years. But the point being, after Quinn in 2018, there was nothing that the Benning era gave them, really, in terms of other young pieces. Best player was probably Höglander, who at best has been an inconsistent top nine guy. And so you look at, okay, why have they been in a situation where, let's say, they're indirectly exchanging their strength at the center ice position when they had Pettersson, Horvat, and Miller, and indirectly traded Horvat and Miller for Hronek and then Marcus Pettersson. It's because they had to plug holes on the blue line that existed because the Benning era couldn't identify, draft, and develop any defenseman. And especially with the mandate of turning it around quickly, which you know that this ownership group would have been targeting because they've never really taken a longer term view and never really had any patience. In my mind, there are very, very few front offices that could have successfully taken that team, non-playoff caliber, poor prospect pool, bad cap situation, and turn them into a sustainable year in, year out Stanley Cup contender in 3 years. That's just near impossible. The margin for error was so slim. And so, last, sorry, 2 off seasons ago, everything they did turned into gold. And so, of course, yeah, you ended up in a situation where the club dramatically exceeded expectations last season, and did well. But this year, there were more hit and miss with some of their bets. And they've made mistakes along the way. Not selling the deadline was a criminal mistake, although I think ownership shares some blame for that as well. And so, in my mind, this front office has done an okay job. Certainly, the way that they constructed the blue line heading into the season was a miss. They've been far from flawless, but I don't think they've been disastrous. Like some people have been, and I don't think this is the majority, but some people throw around the like Benning era or whatever, and it's just like there's a whole different level of dysfunction that isn't even remotely comparable. This management has made mistakes, they have their flaws. There are situations like the Tom Welander fiasco that I don't like the way management has approached it at all. But big picture, this is, I think, the symptom of years before Rutherford and Alvin even took over, of they were always looking for quick fixes, always looking for shortcuts, never accumulated draft picks, never built an elite prospect pipeline so that when Pettersson, Hughes, Miller, Besser were here, that there was a second wave of young, promising players to sort of build around.
Last one before I let you go. I feel like this year, the idea of Vancouver being the toughest market to play and kind of started being bandied about. I'm curious, as someone who's covered the team, from Vancouver, like, what do you think of that kind of spotlight and maybe that narrative that might be coming about that Vancouver is a really tough place to play?
It's a tough place to play when you're a dysfunctional franchise, yeah. But just don't be a dysfunctional franchise. I think it's really that that simple. I mean, was anybody complaining about the media coverage last year? No. When you're good, the storylines are going to be glowing and you're going to feel like you're on top of the world. When you're a tire fire, when you're consistently falling below expectations, and this isn't just this season, but in many previous years with this core group, yeah, there's going to be heat. There's going to be criticism. And I also think because Vancouver is a bigger market, it's also important to clarify that a lot of the reason why there ends up being so much noise that seeps into the locker room is because, and I'm not pointing a finger, but just the Canucks become a national talking point. It's not just local guys stirring it up. Like the Pettersson Miller feud blew up nationally first and then became a local talking point. It wasn't blowing up locally and then the national guys jumped on it. That started nationally. And so I think that distinction is important as well. And that's a function of Vancouver being a bigger market where there are a lot of passionate fans. I think in talking to reporters that have been at it for a really long time, like Farhan Lalji, who Jeff Patterson, who've been at it for multiple decades, they're the first ones to tell you that this market in terms of day in, day out coverage was way more difficult to deal with in, let's say, the heyday in the 2011 heyday, where like just the media pool was way more massive. There were a lot more hard-hitting questions, and not that it's easy now, but the media pool has shrunk a lot compared to where it was 10, 15 years ago. And so to me, it really comes down to don't be a dysfunctional franchise and the storylines will go away. I mean, how many times has this management group themselves been responsible for these storylines that blow up? Like the Quinn Hughes stuff, like that blew up because Jim Rutherford openly talked about it. The Pettersson Miller feud, it was there were a lot of rumors around it, and then it hit a boiling point when Jim Rutherford gave a public interview about it and said, "Hey, this is a problem. We're probably going to have to trade one of these guys." How many times Patrick Alvin has, let's say, challenged Elias Pettersson or said something ab about him that that's become a huge talking point in this market. Rick Tocchet and not being able to sell him on the vision of this team, him leaving, like nobody's talking about that if you had been able to convince him to stay. Like just I don't know, all
Oh,
like
no.
Elias Pettersson, if Elias Pettersson just plays like a top flight player, he's not going to face arrows. He's not going to get criticism. So in my mind, it's just a function of when you struggle in a big hockey market, yeah, there's going to be a lot of attention, there's going to be negativity, and it's tough. Like I feel for some of the players in that locker room where when things are snowballing against you, it can be hard to stay focused. But this is why it's extra important in a large market like Vancouver to have your stuff together and be focused, be disciplined, be a first class organization, and have success when you're expected to have it.
I think that was an amazing parable. I think about it a lot. When you said don't be dysfunctional, I've seen that a lot in here in Ottawa, so I can definitely resonate with that message. Armin, before I let you go, is there anything else you want to kind of plug for the Athletic or anything else coming up that you want people to know about?
Yeah, just continue to pump out my articles at The Athletic, and I've got my podcast with David Quadrelli, Canucks Conversation, Monday or Friday. So that's always fun, especially in the off season. There's always going to be fun storylines. So if anyone wants to check those out, that's cool.
Well, I love your work. I've been a fan for a long time. It's been cool to kind of connect with you the past couple of years, and I'm hoping that it's maybe a bit more a bit less dysfunctional, a bit more fun to be around the rink next year. But thanks so much for taking the time and doing this.
Thanks for having me.